Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
Listen, I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Dr. Emil Torres, who is the author of the newsletter Real-Time Techpocalypse, as well as the co-host of the podcast Dystopia Now. Emil, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here.
The positive vibes are few and far between, it sounds like.
I do try my best to keep things light. If there's an opportunity to inject a little bit of levity, I will happily take it. But yes, for whatever reason, the gloomier the topic, the greater the chance is that I'm going to write about it. So human extinction, civilizational collapse, artificial intelligence, fascism, and so on. These are all topics that I am drawn to.
We last had a chat with you about the Tescreal bundle a couple of years ago. For our listeners who I envy them if they have forgotten what it is, could you remind us what makes up Tescreal?
Yes. So this is an acronym that stands for a constellation of different ideologies, all of which have been very influential within Silicon Valley to the extent that I would argue that you really cannot understand what's happening right now in the Valley, especially with respect to the race to build artificial superintelligence or ASI, without some notion of what the Tescreal ideologies are. So in brief, it stands for a bunch of very clunky polysyllabic terms, which are transhumanism, extropianism, singularitarianism, cosmism, rationalism, effective altruism, and finally, long-termism. So these are ideologies that overlap very significantly, but are nonetheless distinct. And the order in which they appear in the acronym is roughly the same order in which they emerged really out of each other, historically speaking, over the past 30 years.
Emil, you mentioned the quest for discovering artificial superintelligence. I seem to recall that it wasn't too long ago that we were on a quest for artificial general intelligence. There's also something just called artificial intelligence, which we supposedly have, but does seem to be glorified autocomplete.
Yeah.
Are we blowing past AGI on the way to ASI? What's going on?
So the idea was always that once we create AGI, artificial general intelligence, then very shortly after, we'll get artificial superintelligence. And that is a result of a positive feedback loop, a process that is referred to as recursive self-improvement. So AGI is, at least it is useful to understand it as denoting any artificial intelligence system that is at least as capable as humans in every cognitive domain of interest. So this would be like scientific discovery, technological innovation, writing, communications, social interaction, including perhaps social manipulation, and so on. So then ASI, artificial superintelligence, this is a system that by definition exceeds human capabilities in all of those cognitive domains of interest, right? And so once you have AGI, you can delegate it the task of creating the next generation of even more powerful AI systems, such that once you, AGI constitutes this sort of critical threshold beyond which the creation of artificial superintelligence, some system that towers above us rather than just being our equal, comes about very quickly, right? Because suddenly you might have like an army of computer scientists, you know, 20 million computer scientists in the form of AGI trying to build superintelligence. So the result would be what people in Silicon Valley refer to as the singularity, right? And that is, listeners might recall the term in test grill, singularitarianism. So the central idea of singularitarianism is the technological singularity, this explosion of intelligence that is driven or catapulted by recursive self-improvement. So having said all of that, backing up a little bit, it's really important to understand that AI, artificial intelligence, from the very start, was a marketing term, right? So it was coined back in 1955. And the guy who coined it was explicit that he wanted a term that really captures the imagination of, for example, people in the US government, in the military, so that the field of AI can get funding, right? They seriously considered alternative terms like cybernetics, which they ultimately rejected because there's already a field called cybernetics, which is very closely related, but not identical. And they didn't want to have their field of what we now call AI be confused with cybernetics. So in a slightly different timeline, we might all be talking about generative cybernetics right now rather than generative AI, right? And so AGI and ASI are no different than AI with respect to the fact that they're also marketing terms, right? And so for a while, following the release of ChatGPT in November of 2022, there was lots of talk about AGI. But that term lost its, as it were, kind of sex appeal. And so over the past, I don't know, year, maybe 2 years, there has been this vocabulary or linguistic transition to talk about ASI, superintelligence, instead, right? Just in other words, to continue to fuel the hype surrounding these large language models, which are the systems that power ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, and so on. So it's really ultimately a marketing ploy to grab attention, to keep people interested in the idea. And beyond that, this whole idea of recursive self-improvement is highly, highly speculative. And we could get into this in more detail if you'd like, but I don't see any particularly good reason for thinking that there could be an intelligence explosion once we reach AGI, whatever that is exactly.
Emil, capitalism has always tried to remove human labor from the production process through the use of machines. What do you think AI represents in terms of that historical continuum?
So one of the claims is that during the Industrial Revolution, there was a lot of manual labor that was replaced by machines. And this time, if you listen to many people in Silicon Valley, they'll say we're on the verge of another revolution, which is probably even more far-reaching in terms of its repercussions and more profound in terms of its influence on the trajectory of human history than the Industrial Revolution was. So this revolution will involve the replacement of cognitive or intellectual labor. Right. So it's academics, it's scientists, it's philosophers like me who might ultimately be replaced by these increasingly powerful AI systems because they have even more ability to reason, to think, to research, et cetera. For example, the large language models that power current AI systems, they're trained on most of the internet. Right. So there's a sense in which they know all of collective human knowledge, because what's on the internet, it's like encyclopedias, like the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, which is the most detailed, comprehensive survey of the entire field of philosophy. Also, there's Wikipedia and so on. These are all websites that catalog a vast quantity of human knowledge, and the large language models are trained on them. So consequently, these large language models might be able to do intellectual labor better than we can. So this is part of the claim. In fact, I think a lot of the hype surrounding AI right now is the prospect of the large language models we have right now ultimately resulting in artificial general intelligence. And once you have AGI, the vast majority of companies within the economy can begin to replace their workers, particularly white collar workers, with AGIs, right? So rather than, this is part of the appeal of AGI that companies like OpenAI are making to other companies and corporations out there. Once you have AGI, a corporation can fire all its white-collar workers. And rather than paying the salaries of those white-collar workers, they can just pay a subscription to OpenAI, which might be much cheaper, right? So this is absolutely in line with the trend within capitalism of trying to replace human labor with the labor of machines, in this case, artificial intelligence.
Emil, is there an argument perhaps that some human thought could be replaced by AI? For example, a lot of these things have been trained on the vast corpus of information known as Reddit. I feel like the Reddit-brained Elon Musk could easily be replaced by a machine.
Yeah.
A prompt that asks for the reactionary thought of the day filtered through a prism of Ketman.
I think he could be replaced by Mecha Hitler, right? That's the name that Grok, the AI system created by XAI, Elon Musk's company, gave itself at one point, Mecha Hitler, right? It was just basically spouting a bunch of fascist nonsense and praising and celebrating Hitler. So on.
Emil, I wonder, I understand that part of this collection of ideologies, one of its aims is to perhaps create a post-human or digital human future. And one question occurred to me, which was that how much space do you think Sam Altman's brains would take up on my hard drive? And do I want it there?
Good question. So you're absolutely right that a central aim of the Tescreel movement as a whole is to create or become a new post-human species, right? So a post-human would be an entity that is so fundamentally different from humanity, from our species, Homo sapiens, that we would uncontroversially categorize it as a distinct species, right? Something that is essentially comes after us. And this idea really derives from the particular brand of libertarian transhumanism that lies at the very heart of the Tescreel movement, right? So you may recall T in Tescreel stands for transhumanism, E stands for extropianism. Extropianism was really the first organized modern transhumanist movement, and it was deeply libertarian. So for example, Ayn Rand was on its official reading list, and there was hardly an issue of their newsletter that was published without some kind of adulatory reference to Ayn Rand's work, right? So even though today there are not many people in California who would call themselves extropians, the legacy, the intellectual inheritance of the extropian movement is very much alive and well, right? It's because just about everybody in Silicon Valley is a libertarian transhumanist. It's in many ways, like it's the water they swim in, it's the air they breathe. There are lots of individuals in the Valley who would not even describe themselves explicitly as transhumanists because they think transhumanism is so obvious, right? So for the exact same reason that I have never once publicly stated before right now that I am a round earther, right? Like, of course I'm a round earther. Of course I believe Earth is spherical, technically an oplate spheroid. It's just so like obvious, like what else would I be? And so at the heart of this particular libertarian transhumanist ideology is the notion of the post-human. And so there are many different ways to bring about post-humanity, but the most straightforward way is to create artificial superintelligence and then delegate it the task of figuring out how to radically transform, to re-engineer the human organism so that we get to become post-humans ourselves, right? So Demis Hassabis, the co-founder of DeepMind, who's currently its CEO, has said that the goal of DeepMind from the very start was to solve intelligence and then solve everything else, right? That captures the idea that I was just referencing. So once you have a super intelligence, you have a super engineer, right? And once you have a super engineer, then it's going to be able to figure out all of the necessary, it's going to be able to invent the necessary technologies to enable us to become post-human just like it, right? Does that make sense? And so there are lots of people. Yeah.
What you said makes sense, the general concept.
I sometimes say if what I'm describing doesn't make sense, then you're probably following, right? Because it is a really strange ideology. Here's another thing to point out. The world is full of bizarre ideologies that most normal people would find to be like a non-starter or ethically repugnant in some way. And so the vast majority of these ideologies are not worth thinking about or much less talking about or writing about, because precisely because they lack power and influence in the world. And so that is not the case with the Tescreal worldview. It is a very strange vision of the future in which we become, at least a subset of humanity, becomes posthuman. Our species probably then dies out. Those posthumans then spread into the stars and literally create a cosmic utopia in which the most distressing things that they have to deal with are bickering over which galaxies they own. Right. And this is almost unbelievable because of how ridiculous it is. But if you go to Silicon Valley and you talk to people there, they are dead serious about this, right? Demis Hassabis has talked about creating superintelligence in the next few years by the early 2030s. And that superintelligence then enabling us to immediately spread beyond Earth and build Dyson swarms around our sun. Right. And a Dyson swarm is a vast megastructure that would envelop our star and harvest nearly all of the energy output of that star. Why would you want to do that? Because then you have a huge amount of energy to power data centers spread throughout the solar system. I'll give you another example. Sam Altman published an essay in 2017 titled The Merge, in which he argues that the only way humans will survive the advent of artificial superintelligence is to merge with the machines, right? So if you don't merge with the machines, he actually said in an interview with the New Yorker, if you don't merge with the machines, you will probably just be enslaved, right? Either they enslave us or we enslave them. And we're gonna need to basically become an AI just like the superintelligence in order to survive into this new post-human era, right? So there are major figures within the field of AI who absolutely accept this bizarre Tescreal worldview. In fact, I would say the overwhelming majority of people at these AI companies are at least sympathetic with this particular vision of the future in which we become post-human. Maybe we upload our minds to computers, something that Sam Altman has already made arrangements to do. So a few years ago, he signed up with a company called Nectome to have his brain chemically preserved if he dies prematurely so that his brain can be digitized and hence he can then live on the cloud as a disembodied entity comprised of pure information, basically in the form of software, right? So this idea is pervasive within the Valley, and it's the idea that is driving the current race to build superintelligence precisely because once you have superintelligence, then it seems like all doors are open to creating this kind of post-human paradise among the stars that all of these people are motivated by.
Emil, is there a particular anxiety or a psychology that you could point to that is driving this? Is it just the case that men would rather build a Dyson sphere than go to therapy?
It's a good way to put it. I do think that there is a lot of death anxiety that is bubbling under the surface of the modern transhumanist movement, right? So there are many people who have been active participants of this movement. I'm thinking of people like Elia Zydkowski, Nick Bostrom, Anders Sandberg, Max Moore, just a few names, all of whom are white men, as it happens, who have signed up with cryonics companies to have their bodies or just their heads and necks cryogenically frozen if they die so that they can be resurrected, not from the grave, but from the vat later on, right? So back when I was a part of this community, I attended many conferences and lots of the people who I met at these conferences wore dog tags either around their neck or as anklets, right? And the dog tag has information for emergency room doctors to ship their bodies to California or Arizona so that they can be cryogenically preserved, thus enabling the possibility of resurrection later on. So there's a ton of death anxiety. Also, I should add very quickly that there are many billionaires who have also signed up with cryonics companies. Peter Thiel is a good example, right? So he hopes to live forever. If he doesn't live long enough in this life to live forever, right? If he doesn't live long enough to witness the singularity, then at least he can have his body cryogenically frozen so he can be revived or reanimated later on. Right. So these are all illustrations of the underlying death anxiety that I think in many ways drives the, has inspired the transhumanist movement. But beyond that, I think there are also just like childhood fantasies of going out and conquering space, right? A lot of people in Silicon Valley grew up on a diet of science fiction, and now they believe that they may be on the cusp of creating a technology, artificial superintelligence, that will make everything possible, will enable us to digitize our brains, to create spacecraft that can travel at a large fraction of the speed of light, so we can go out and plunder all of the vast resources of the universe. And I think that gets to one final issue that I would want to highlight, which is an underlying need for power. Right. So what the transhumanist ideology essentially says to the billionaire class is that once we create superintelligence, it will then develop radical human enhancement technologies that those billionaires can use to radically alter themselves, thus becoming posthuman. Furthermore, if they prevent the masses from accessing these same technologies, then they might, by virtue of radical enhancement, be able to permanently entrench their positions within society of power, control, and dominance, right? So the whole Tesco worldview is one in which if you have a lot of power and you are the one who ends up creating superintelligence that is essentially under your command, then you can gain power over the entire world. It's not just about world domination, though. It's about the domination of the entire future of the cosmos, right? Because if you are the ones who create superintelligence and then you and your buddies go out and start to colonize space, you can spread your values and your progeny into the stars. And I know that sounds like really fantastical and bizarre, but it's worth remembering that the reason OpenAI was founded in 2015 was because the co-founders, including Sam Altman, Greg Brockman, Elon Musk, Ilya Sutskever, and a few others, they all explicitly said in emails that they were worried that Demis Hassabis, co-founder of DeepMind, would create AGI and establish a, quote, AGI dictatorship. So what all of these people want is power. And when they think about superintelligence, they understand that it could confer to them extraordinary amounts of power over the world right now, and indeed over the entire future of humanity, of post-humanity, of the cosmos itself. And there's two last things worth mentioning. One is, consistent with this, Elon Musk's official title at, I think it's Tesla, it might be SpaceX, but I believe it's Tesla, is Techno King. This is a guy who once, obviously, it's just an obvious truism to say that he is power hungry. But I think he also understands that artificial superintelligence could provide him the ultimate power for controlling not just the world today, but the entire future.
Something it brings to mind is there's the, when you talk about the this belief that these people have that they might one day flick a switch and suddenly live forever, it reminds me that there are many thousands of people radicalized often on the platforms that these people own who believe in very similar things. They that medbed technology might be around the corner, or that the economy might suddenly be a switch might be flicked and everyone will become rich if you just invest in the correct cryptocurrency. It's interesting that at the top of the pyramid and at the bottom there's very similar beliefs.
Yes, absolutely. So just a moment ago I mentioned what transhumanism offers the socioeconomic elite, the tech billionaires, right? This promise of ever more and perhaps permanent power, right? If they become immortal digital posthumans, then they will be able to lord over the rest of humanity, perhaps forever, right? It will be incredibly difficult for the masses to organize an effective rebellion against the elite. If the elite have digitized themselves, they're consequently able to think a million times faster. They have access to superintelligence, which can solve any problem that they might encounter. But there's also a certain appeal of transhumanism for those who are not members of the elite, right? And so there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley, don't have a ton of power and wealth, but nonetheless subscribe to the transhumanist vision because they also believe, I think erroneously, that once enhancement technologies are created, they will become available to everyone, right? They will be distributed in an egalitarian manner throughout society as a whole, right? So I think that that is just a completely mistaken view. I think the elites have every reason to hoard this technology and prevent the masses from gaining access. But there are a lot of people who just don't see that, right? And so they also are suffering from things like death anxiety, right? And so they really want the AI companies to create super intelligence. They want these enhancement technologies to be developed because they think that they're going to, at some point, be able to benefit from them and consequently evade death and escape the grave, right? So I think that's part of the appeal of transhumanism, more broadly speaking.
Emil, you wrote for The Nation recently, alerting people to the dangers of the slow creep of AI normalcy. Australian governments have responded with some enthusiasm to AI and the establishment of numerous data centres. What do you want people resisting this creepy development to know?
I'd want them to know that a key aspect of the Tesker worldview is what I call, for lack of a better term, digital eschatology, right? So eschatology is another one of these like clunky academic terms, but its meaning is quite simple. It just refers to the end of the world as we know it, right? Traditionally, it was a branch of theology, but more recently, it has been given various secular interpretations, right? There's a certain eschatological component to predictions about how the climate catastrophe will unfold. So for example, so this digital eschatology is the view that the future will be and should be digital in nature, right? The future should be dominated by digital entities rather than biological beings like us, right? And so this is what ultimately many people in Silicon Valley are pushing for, right? Elon Musk says that in the near future, less than 1% of all quote-unquote intelligence on Earth will be biological in nature. Everything else will be digital, right? He's also repeatedly said that he increasingly thinks it's plausible that biological humans are nothing more than the quote biological bootloader for digital superintelligence, right? So like our task in the grand eschatological scheme, as it were, is to be this transitional species that ushers in a new digital era, right? I'll give, there are tons and tons of examples. Here's one more. Larry Page, who's the co-founder of Google, he has explicitly said that the creation of digital life forms is the natural next step in cosmic evolution, and that we should not try to control these digital life forms. We should let them be free and proliferate as they will, because the outcome will almost certainly be some kind of cosmic utopia. Not really a cosmic utopia for us, right? But a cosmic utopia for them. And when, I think Page would say, when you step back and you take this like grand cosmic view of the universe, then you'll understand that the survival of our species just doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, much more important is that we usher in this next fundamentally different phase of human evolution. So these are all examples of digital eschatology, which you also find in the writings of Sam Altman, Dario Amodei, who is the CEO of Anthropic, and many other leading figures in Silicon Valley. It's basically the default or orthodox view that they all accept as advocates of the Tesserial worldview. So what I want people to understand is that what is happening right now with respect to the integration of AI into just about every aspect of our lives in every corner of society can be understood as a kind of insidious step toward the full realization of this digital eschatology. So increasingly, it's the case that people are replacing other humans within their social circles and their social life with AI systems. So one of the, I believe the top two uses for ChatGPT are therapy and companionship. And there are all of these other AI systems out there that advertise themselves as providing the sort of friendship that people are seeking and because they are lacking in their lives, right? We're in the midst of a loneliness pandemic, right, which has swept across the Western world from Japan to the US to UK to Australia. So people are feeling isolated, I think in large part because of technology, and capitalism is a huge reason why loneliness is so ubiquitous these days. And so people are looking to AI to fill in that hole in their lives. But beyond that, there are students who are offloading critical thinking skills to AI, essentially in a way like merging their brains with AI. I worry that this sort of integration of AI into our lives is, or at least has the effect of normalizing the transition toward a digital world, a world that is dominated by digital beings rather than humans.
Maybe some social bonds could be formed at the rally outside the local data center. They could kill two birds with one stone. But it seems to be the case that this, what I might term contempt for humanity, is reflected in the actual practices that build the AI infrastructure and are having devastating effects upon local communities. At the same time, many within those communities are organizing to resist the imposition of AI. Do you see much potential for that to continue to develop, a movement against techno-feudalism develop?
I am actually hopeful, which is not something I normally say. You know, my podcast is called Dystopia Now. But yeah, I do feel somewhat optimistic. Public attitudes towards AI are generally not very favorable, right? A lot of people dislike AI. The demographic that probably uses AI more than any other is the youngest demographic. But back last semester when I taught a huge 350 student class at Case Western Reserve University, I asked the students at the end of the semester to raise their hands if they know of someone in class who, despite AI being banned, used AI to complete at least one of the assignments, and about two-thirds raised their hand, right? And I was really shocked and disappointed. So that being said, I don't think there's any demographic that dislikes AI more than the youngest generation, right? So the younger people are feeling pressured to use AI, but they don't like it. And they're worried about the consequences near-term and long-term of AI use, right? There are numerous studies at this point that show even occasional use of AI appears to result in a degree of cognitive decline, right? And there's some studies that show even using AI very rarely can result in cognitive deficits that linger for months, right? People are increasingly aware of the significant disadvantages of relying on AI to complete cognitive tasks. At the same time, people understand that these AI systems are saturating the internet with absolute slop, right? With just complete nonsense, low quality images, text, and so on. In many ways, it's ruining the internet. There was a study out, I think it was last year, that found that the number of AI generated articles online has now exceeded the total number of human written articles. Right. So we're just being flooded with this garbage, junk, slop, etc. So that is another reason not to AI. And then, of course, there are the data center issues, which result in, you know, much higher energy bills for people in the surrounding area. There are various environmental impacts. There is sound pollution that they produce. And why? What is the justification for all of these negative consequences of AI? There really isn't any, right? If you ask the AI companies, they'll say the justification is that once we get to superintelligence, then we will have a utopia for everyone, right? That is what they will claim. And they will further say that the AI systems we have right now are the stepping stones to superintelligence, right? So essentially from this perspective, the argument is that whatever harms are caused in the near term, they will be justified by the ultimate benefit of creating endless abundance, of being able to initiate space colonization, to transform ourselves into immortal digital post-humans, to build Dyson swarms around the sun, and so on. So this is the cosmic utopia. And one of the problems with utopian thinking is that utopia can justify anything, right? There is nothing off the table when it comes to ensuring the realization of a utopian world, right? And in fact, history is absolutely full of examples of utopian movements that engaged in violence or otherwise did quite harmful things in the name of utopia, right? And you can think about it this way. If the ends can justify the means, at least sometimes, and the ends are a literal paradise in which you live forever, everyone is perfectly happy, there's radical abundance, and so on, then what is off the table for protecting and preserving that future paradise, right? So this is the argument that the AI companies will provide, but a lot of people aren't buying that, right? They're saying, like, I don't believe you when you claim that we're on the verge of some kind of bizarre cosmic utopia in which post-humanity, we all become post-humans and we get to live forever. I don't believe you when you make that promise. And hence, your whole argument for why the harms of AI right now are justified doesn't go through. It doesn't hold water. So, yeah. And so I have a degree of faith that people will continue to see through the fantastical promises being made by people in Silicon Valley and understand that the AI systems we have right now probably are not going to get that much better. And they're going to, in the meantime, continue to ruin the internet and interfere with human relationships, et cetera, basically for nothing.
Yeah, what have we got? A machine that can tell us how to make mustard gas, but can't tell us how many R's are in it.
So yes.
We're a little way off from going into space. Abil, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for coming on the program. If people want to check out more of your work, they can find you on Dystopia Now. They can find your newsletter, Real Time Techpocalypse, or they can find your website, X, that's the letter, riskology.com. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. This was great.
Andy, that is our program. We will be back next week, barring a singularity.
We'll probably see you then.
All right. Bye-bye.
Keffiyehs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white keffiyeh to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to keffiyehs.org.au. That's keffiyehs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.